But now, Dave Windsor traces the history of Radio Caroline in the program called...
Marine Offences Act became law in the majority of the United Kingdom at midnight on the 14th of August 1967. The Act didn't come into force on the Isle of Man until later that month. Don Allen was a DJ on Radio Caroline North at the time. International, go, go!
Ladies and gentlemen, it's now 12 midnight on Radio Caroline North. Broadcasting on 259 meters in the medium wave band, you're listening to the continuing voice of free radio for the British Isles, Caroline North, national and international. It now gives us great pleasure to play for you the Manx national anthem, O Land of Our Birth.
The Marine Defenses Bill applied to Caroline South on the 15th of August. It didn't apply to us until the end of August. So we were virtually... free for 2 weeks longer. We even came off, we played a game of football with St. Helens GPO team. This is after the Marine Offences Bill had been signed. Then after the end of August, we of course had to, instead of taking the 40-minute trip from the boat to Ramsey, we had to take our 18-hour, at the best of times, trip to Dundalk in Southern Ireland. And at the worst, it would take something like 3 days.
Don Allen. As a result of the new legislation, which laid staff, advertisers, suppliers, or indeed anyone assisting an offshore radio station in any way open to prosecution, the Caroline organization moved its entire operation from London to the center of Amsterdam. The Admiral, Robbie Dale.
It was great to go to Amsterdam for the first time because we arrived at Single 160, which was the Dutch office, and there was Pinky Seidenberg, this young Dutch girl running a nice, well-furnished, smart office, sort of the transplanted Caroline house from Chesterfield Gardens to a canal in Amsterdam. And there were furniture that we recognized from Caroline House. And a great welcome, and there was sort of money and arrangements had been made for our accommodation and the whole thing. And it looked as though it was going to take off and continue.
Listeners to both Carolines soon began to hear new voices on the air.
This is the Roger Day Show.
Rise and swizzle with Caroline.
They flew me out to Amsterdam and I went out on that awful tender ride from Maiden to Harwich. It was terrible. It used to take 16 hours in good conditions and 23 and 24 hours in bad conditions.
You wouldn't believe what you'd have seen this afternoon if you'd been out around the Mi Amigo. I tell you, oh, everyone belting out with life jackets on, doing a fire drill. Oh, nobody knew how to operate anything or nothing. Oh, I tell you, if we'd have been sinking, I would have stayed in my bunk. At least it was warm down there.
Big Papa, gonna treat you right.
This is Radio Caroline International on 259. It is now exactly 11 o'clock, Bulova Watch Time, B-U-L-O-V-A, Bulova. When you know what makes a watch tick, you too will buy a Bulova.
My first show went out between 8 and 9 at night. Robbie Dale was doing 6 till 9. And he said, will you do the last hour? So I said, yeah, okay. And I was wondering what name to use. I wanted to use Andy, which was my real name. But I didn't want to use my real surname because we had to go through the customs quite a lot, you know, and I thought, well, if I get nabbed, which is just my luck, I'll get fined 400 quid or something. And I hadn't got a name, you know, in about 5 to 8. Well, all sorts of strange names were going through my head, you know, like sort of Zach Stardust and... Vince whatever, you know, it's all sort of flashy names. And at about 5 to 8, Robbie said to me, have you got a name yet? So I thought, oh, well, if we've got the Dales, which was a series on Radio 4 at the time, we may as well have the Archers as well, which was another series. So that's how I became Andy Archer. My first show was about the best one I did on Caroline in the 60s, because nobody had explained to me the playlist. You know, you had to play these dreadful records, which were people were paying about 100 quid a week to have them played. I mean, they were really awful. There'd never be a hit in a million years. And we had to play these things. It was about 18 an hour, and you really had to go some to get 18 records in an hour. But nobody had explained the playlist to me, so I just took down a pile of albums and was playing The Byrds and Buffalo Springfield and Otis Redding and things like that. I got really bollocked for that. You know, I thought I was going to get the sack after one day, and then sort of 19 hours back again on Tuesday.
With Caroline on 259.
This is the sound of a nation, Radio Caroline South, 259 meters, medium wave band. The time right now is 9 o'clock.
The Goon Maldoon on 259.
We were in that sort of no man's land, but not really knowing from day to day what was going to happen. I mean, the first day we went illegal, we thought the tugboats and the British Navy would be out in seconds, but they didn't. You know, what Roland had told us in those days before were true, that, you know, we weren't really breaking the law. We were bending it a bit and taking a chance, but the British government, being what they are, play by the rules, and we hadn't actually broken any of them. I think had the money not have run out in the March of 68 or something, was it? 68, it closed in March. The advertisers got frightened. They wouldn't spend money with us, not enough. We take about £1,000 a week when we needed £2,000-£3,000 a week, and it just went into inflation like everybody else does, and we just had to close because the bills couldn't be met. But the British government were pretty good to us. They didn't hustle us in any way at all.
DJ Spangles Muldoon, otherwise known as Chris Carey. It was becoming clear that Caroline's attempt to remain on the air in defiance of the law was to be short-lived. The Marine Offences Act, having scared off many advertisers, left the station, as Spangle said, in severe financial difficulties. Robbie Dale now explains how Radio Caroline of the 60s was eventually forced to give up its fight for free radio.
There was a problem between Ronan O'Reilly and Phil Solomon. And Phil Solomon had got the financial control of the station, because Ronan was finding it difficult to raise cash from the sponsors. And Phil Solomon was paying all the wages and paying all the fuel and what have you. In fact, he wasn't, was the problem. But everyone was led to believe that he was. And the tender company, the Weismiller organization, eventually came out and grabbed the ships as some form of collateral to try and get the money out of Phil Solomon that they were owed, which I believe was somewhere in the region of about £70,000.
Radio Caroline boss Ronan O'Reilly takes up the story.
Well, in fact, what happened was there was a row between the Weismiller brothers internally, of which we were totally unaware. And because one of the brothers was involved with us as an investor, as it were, the other brother, his older brother, got very uptight at that. This was a row they were having, personal row. And one of the games was, all right, I'll take your ships away to the other brother. The other brother, thinking that was a complete bluff, didn't pass it on to me or anyone else. And zap, I mean, literally sent out the tugboats. Their crews were on there anyway. So there wasn't any sort of pirate grab situation in a way, although technically they were committing piracy, technically, because they're strict, you know, the owners, you know, of the companies, etc., down the line, the companies that were the owners, with, you know, Panamanian at the time, had actually said that the boats were not to be moved from the positions they were in. So technically they were actually committing piracy. But it was absolutely to do with a row between the brothers, unless somebody got to the older brother, right, and said, "Zap, there's X amount. Get rid of those ships." Now, that is not, you know, we all know there are setups that do play those kind of games.
DJs Andy Archer, Don Allen, Johnny Walker, and Robbie Dale remember March the 3rd, 1968 very clearly.
This tugboat came up alongside. It was a pre-arranged thing. Apparently, a lot of bills hadn't been paid or something, although there have been sort of allegations that it was done at British government level because the Torrey Canyon, it was about the time that the Torrey Canyon was lying off the Cornish coast, and there was a rumour going around, quite a strong rumour at one stage, that the British government would offer the contract to Weismuller to tow away the Torrey Canyon if they closed down the Carolines. That's quite feasible. I mean, Wilson was a man of very dubious nature, as has been proven many times since. But basically, they just came on board, showed some papers to the captain saying they were going to tow us, and we were pretty helpless, really. You know, there wasn't much we could do about it. And we were towed over that morning. I think it took the North Ship about 3 or 4 days to get around.
We were told by the Weismuller man that we weren't going on the air next morning, that we're being towed away to Holland for our own safety because the ship hadn't been docked and checked for several years, well, for a few years, and it was in our own interests, our own safety, that we were going to be towed away. Well, this didn't sound right because I had received no prior notice from Ronan O'Reilly or anybody connected with Caroline about this happening. We were told to, the chief engineer was told to hand the crystals in to ensure that we couldn't broadcast. And we objected strongly. And of course, the captain had no choice in the matter. He was unofficially demoted at the time. He had no say at all in the ship. We were told simply that the ship was going to Holland, and that was that.
And I heard that they'd given the order that we were to get whatever stuff out of the studio we wanted because it was going to be locked and sealed. And then I'd heard that they'd cut the anchor chain. And there were rumors going around at the time that Caroline would go back into port and get the barnacles scraped off her hull and get a service because she hadn't had one in a long time. But if they did that, then I would think that they'd disconnect the anchor chain at the ship end and fix it to a floating buoy so that when they brought the boat back, it would be a simple matter to reconnect it to the anchor chain. But when you cut the anchor chain and just let it fall into the ocean, seems to me you're not planning to come back to that position again. It seemed awful. All I could think about was, you know, there's just going to be silence there. There's nobody is going to know what's happened. You know, we didn't get a chance to say goodbye or anything.
It was rather odd because we were going down the coast of England and picking up all these various different channels. We were picking up Tellywelly Wales and Southern Television, things like this. And seeing ourselves on television, you know, pictures taken from helicopters and things like this, seeing ourselves being towed away and being told over on the television set that Caroline is out of business, she'd closed down. And then we were sitting there wondering what the hell was happening. But the Caroline South boys were all right. They found out in a matter of 1.5-2 days. It took us a week to find out, you know, before we knew what the hell was going on. Because it was a week to the day that we arrived in Holland.
We got towed across the North Sea, which took quite a long time, and then it was kind of strange getting towed up the Ship Canal and right into the center of Amsterdam. Nobody seemed to know what was going on. There was a Dutch girl who was working for the Caroline office called Pinky Seidenberg, and she either wasn't telling or didn't know what on earth was happening.
We went to the office where Robbie Dale was, who was sort of Philip Solomon's man in Amsterdam. And we sort of hung around for a few days thinking that possibly Ronan could pull a rabbit out of the hat, as it were, and we'd go sailing back out again. But as time got by, they moved the ship further into the harbour, and it was pretty obvious that they weren't going to be towed out again. So we just dispersed and went our own ways.
In fact, I was in Spain, and this telegram arrived, and it was from Johnny, and it said, "Carol has gone. Can't join you. See you soon." And I got on the phone right away and got the story, flew back from Spain, tried to put things together, tried to bring the wise mullahs and Solomon and Ronan together, but the void had been dug, and it was very deep, and Solomon wouldn't part with the money until they put the ships back out again, and the wise mothers wouldn't put the ships out again until he parted with the money, and so on. It was just terrible, because at that time, when they pulled them in, the ships were starting to take money again. Little bits of ads were coming in again. All right, it was all records that were keeping us alive, record companies paying to have their records played, but that was the only form of income that we had. So some people say, it was payola, but let's face it, at the end of the day, that was paying for the fuel oil, the food, and for the DJ's wages, although Mr. Solomon was also making a very fat profit out of it. And I think possibly, it's the old problem of greed, isn't it? You know, when do you decide whether something is going to go on and give you a long-term return on your investment, or decide, I better grab what I've got right now and run. Unfortunately, that's the difference between people in radio for the sake of radio and people in radio for the sake of money.
Both the Caroline North ship, the MV Caroline, and the Mi Amigo, home of Caroline South, were impounded and eventually towed into Amsterdam. Attempts to refloat the station using the former Radio 270 ship, the Ocean 7, failed, and it seemed as though the sound of the nation would never be heard again. In 1970, interest in offshore radio was rekindled with the arrival of a new station, Radio Nordsee International. But within a few months of beginning broadcasting, R&I, as she was known, was jammed by the British government.
This is the place that's gonna blow your mind.
The place that's gonna blow your mind.
The place that's gonna blow your mind.
This is the sound of radio, North Sea.
The sound of radio,
North Sea. The sound of radio, North Sea.
The International apologizes to you, our listeners, for the interference heard on our transmission. This illegal jamming is directed from the Labour government and organized by the post office. This action is meant to discourage us from providing you with our normal service. However, R&I shall make every effort to continue programs as usual. This is Radio North Sea International.
This is Radio North Sea International coming your way on 190 metres in the medium wave band. And if you're picking us up nice and clearly on 190 metres, why not drop us a reception report, but don't send it to Zurich. Send it to FRA 239 Eastwood Road, Rayleigh in Essex. That's 239 Eastwood Road, Rayleigh, spelled R-A-Y-L-E-I-G-H, Rayleigh in Essex. And if you didn't get that address, I'll repeat it again after the next record. Which comes from the band Sound 30 this week.
This is Radio North Sea International, currently on test broadcasting on the medium wave band 244 meters, 1230 kilocycles. RNI, test broadcasting.
The following is a statement issued by the directors of Radio North Sea International. Radio North Sea moved to the frequency of 1230 kilocycles, 244 meters, because this frequency does not cause any interference to emergency broadcasts or legally authorized stations. However, the British government has accused us of interfering with other stations, although no proof can be found of this, and certainly no complaint has been received by our offices in Zurich. We would remind the British government that all frequency infringement allegations must be investigated by the Intertelecommunications Union in Geneva. This is the body that controls all European frequencies and prevents nations having to handle complaints with other nations personally. This would have been the legal method of investigating the alleged interference rather than the chosen illegal method of jamming Radio North Sea, the cost of which the British taxpayer has to provide. No free Western country has ever jammed a free broadcasting station, even in times of war. Radio North Sea trusts that the legal right we have to broadcast without interference to you will soon be restored. R&I intends to remain on the air.
R&I Music.
A campaign of support for R&I was launched, which was to get the station involved in politics. But more specifically, the 1970 general election. This was the first time that 18-year-olds were eligible to vote, and also a chance for Radio Caroline to get herself back in the limelight. Radio Nordsee International's program director at the time was Larry Tremaine.
It all came about when we talked to Ronan O'Reilly, and he said something has to be done. We must get involved politically. We must do something to stop this illegal jamming, as we called it. And our defense was that what could we do to help the conservative government without actually being involved with the elections? And so what we did was we decided that we would ask the young listeners to vote and reminded them that the conservative government, one of the platforms that they were going for was for commercial radio. Ronan decided that he wanted to truly mastermind or oversee the entire operation and asked if we would, for the next 2 weeks, change our name to Radio Caroline, because Caroline meant much more to the country than even North Sea did. It was the backbone of pirate radio. So we changed to Radio Caroline for, I believe it was 10 days.
You are currently tuned to 244 meters, 1230 kilocycles in the medium wave band on FM channel 43, 100 megacycles. Please stand by following the next record for an important news development. Good evening. This is Carl Mitchell welcoming you to the new sound of Radio Caroline International. This is Andy Archer. The unbelievable has happened. This is the return of Radio Caroline International.
Caroline! Radio Caroline is surviving. It's all because of you, and you are making it all possible. Right now, it's 28 minutes past the hour of 4 o'clock. In the afternoon, you're all on your way to number 10. Wait a minute, Roger Day is here.
Yes, I really would like to say that in my greatest expectations, I never realized that so many people would turn out in our cause, and well, you've made all the disc jockeys and the crew on board very proud and very happy to be, you know, part of you. And right now, I'm very proud to be British, and I'm proud of you, too. So thank you very much for turning up. Back to Larry.
Right. I think what we're doing right now is unbelievable. I hope that everyone realizes what our fight is all about. I hope everyone...
I would say that there were numerous discussions. In fact, a lot of the discussion was who was going to pay for all this. There were campaign posters. There were buses to be hired. There was a lot of money to be spent. Obviously, there were many discussions as to what the outcome of something like this would be and what repercussions would come from the British government for such an involvement.
Your help is needed urgently to fight for Radio Caroline and for your freedom. You'll be working with TV star Simon Dee, Caroline's first disc jockey, and Ronan O'Reilly, the man who brought offshore radio to Britain. Join the team working on the Caroline buses. Call immediately London 629-8606. Today, telephone London 01629-8606.
Yes, thank you very much, Alan. Very true words there. And, well, I know we are sort of going on about political things here, and that isn't really what a radio station is all about, but this is something we've been forced in by a very dictatorial attitude. I mean, if you remember, the Marine Defences Bill was passed. It made it very difficult for Caroline to survive, and it resulted, actually, in Caroline going off the air before on March the 3rd, 1968.
Now, we were all extremely depressed, obviously, because we had a pretty powerful medium-wave transmitter, and our audience was lost because of this incessant noise that was being put out on our frequency by the GPO.
The people in the Essex area were able to hear us fairly well. We were losing London, and we were losing the Midlands, and we were losing most of the country.
By the Ministry of Technology, the Ministry official concerning this said that he had no other details to hand. Finally, the weather. All parts of the country will have a cool, windy day with showers in most places. In Wales and southern England, the showers will be...
The jamming, obviously, as we felt, couldn't go on forever, and we were just going to roll with the punches. We did, as I say, talk to many high officials and tried to see how we could make it easy for them to stop this jamming without losing face. And the answer was, change the government, and you'll change the jamming.
And big news here, Alan. Sorry to interrupt once again, but very important election news. The swing to Tories, in fact, gets larger rather than smaller. That Wolverhampton North East seat that's now become a marginal is a 9% swing to Tories, the largest one so far. We've had a 7%, 8%, a 5%, and now a 9% swing. William Hill, actually, have now changed their odds.
Who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Wilson?
One day I was sitting in my home and I was watching the TV show Dad's Army, and I heard this cute little ditty song come over the air, and I said, that's it, that'll do it. And I called up a couple of other disc jockeys and I said, you won't believe it, I've got the wildest idea of them all. And he says, well, what is that? I said it's Who Do You Think You're Kidding, Mr. Wilson. So I said, I'm going to write some lyrics and we'll have it. I wrote down some lyrics. We got 8 or 10 of the best recording groups in England together. And we went in and recorded, Who Do You Think You're Kidding, Mr. Wilson, If You Think Free Radio's Down. And of course, I thought it was just as cute as can be, plus it was only 1 minute long. And to many people's feeling, they certainly felt that this was a big part of the campaign.
Radio Nordsee Programme Director Larry Tremaine. There is no doubt that the Save Radio Caroline campaign instigated a swing to the Conservatives in many a marginal constituency. The Tories won the election and Edward Heath became Prime Minister. Shortly afterwards, the name Caroline was dropped and Radio Nordsee continued broadcasting after a break of only half an hour one Saturday afternoon, making no reference whatsoever to the activities of the preceding weeks. The jamming, however, continued, and feeling thoroughly duped, the RNI ship, the Mebo 2, weighed anchor and returned to a position off the Dutch coast.
Who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Wilson? Who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Wilson?
This is Radio North Sea International, Europe's most popular music station on 217 meters in the medium wave band, which is 1385 kilocycles, in VHF channel 30, 96 megacycles, and our two shortwave frequencies of the 31 meter band, 9.94 megacycles, and the 49 meter band, 6.2 megacycles. And now the right time from Bulova is exactly 10 o'clock. Bulova, the inventors of Accutron, the electronic tuning fork watch.
But Radio Caroline was to return, and next week there is a mutiny on the high seas.
Was Caroline, Queen of the Pirates, a series in 13 parts tracing the history of the world's best-known offshore radio station, Radio Caroline. The producer wishes to thank East Anglian Productions of Frinton, Essex, for their valuable assistance in the making of this program. The series is produced and presented by Dave Windsor.